This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3061 for Monday the 27th of April 2020. Today's show is entitled Parental Controls with Mike Ivey. It is hosted by Operator and is about 34 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, we talk about parental controls and IoT device.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
All right, so I'm here with Mike Ivey for another episode of Hacker Public Radio, and we're going to do this again because we did it last night, and he's graciously letting us try this again, and we should be able to go through it a little bit quicker. But our topic today is we're talking about a little bit about Mike's background, and then we're going to talk about child protection monitoring. What are we calling it?
Parental controls.
Parental controls. Yeah. Yeah. So kind of to start off, we said, you know, what's your background and how did you start and kind of who were your influences growing up and how you got into, you know, InfoSec and IT?
Yeah. Yeah. So my background, I kind of started young age, like most of us. A family member built a computer for us and I used to break it. You know, I would go in, it was Windows 98, go in, you know, delete random things out of the registry and, you know, just kind of tinker around. And after taking it to the cousin for, you know, 3 or 4 times, I asked him to show me how to reinstall the operating system because basically that's what he was having to do every time I messed it up. So from there, you know, I probably reinstalled it 100 or more times after learning, because, you know, it was fun. I went on to purchase computers from like the thrift store. You know, they had CRTs and mice and keyboard and towers that you could buy. And, you know, back then I didn't know much about like the different types of RAM or hard drives. So I was just plugging stuff in and if it fit, it fit. If the computer turned on, then I was like, oh, cool, it works. And that number is bigger, you know, so maybe that matters.
So, like, where did your parents give you, like, some allowance to buy stuff from the thrift store? Or did you do, like, side jobs or something? Or how did you?
Yeah, so this was, I got a high school job. And, I don't even know how I found that computers were at the thrift store. Maybe I just visited one and saw that in the back. It's like, oh, that's cool. I worked and would take some of my money and go and buy computer parts, bring them home, put them together. My mom was always surprised and impressed. She's like, how do you know so much? I'm like, I don't know, I just play around with it. From there, I had a friend of the family who showed some interest in me, and you know, I really wanted to do some more stuff with the computers. So, you know, they kind of encouraged me and, it took me kind of being in a job that I didn't really want to be in. I wasn't happy. I was just collecting a check. And I, you know, kind of decided there, I was like, I want to do something that I will enjoy, you know, something that I can get paid and it can support my lifestyle, but also, you know, that's kind of fun to me. And, you know, I kind of circled back around and found my way back to technology and computers. So, you know, back then, this was around like 2007, A+ certification, that's like your way in the door, getting past HR. So, you know, I went, I actually took a course, but, I took a two-week course, passed both of the A-plus certification exams. While doing those doing the testing or studying, I built my first computer from scratch, bought the CPU, motherboard, PSU, everything, put it together. I actually thought that I was a failure because it didn't work the first time. And I was like, oh man, I'm going to be a terrible computer person. And luckily I figured out I just didn't plug in the power for the CPU. So yeah, that kind of started.
Oh, like the little, the little cable that plugs into the, the motherboard.
Yep. I didn't plug it in. And of course CPU is not, powered up. Computer just, you know, things spin up and nothing happens. So, yeah, from there, I just kind of, you know, worked my way up. I started off in kind of network admin, help desk, did some sysadmin, and then eventually made my way into a full security position where that's where I am now. So, yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and I mean, I will say, like I said, out of all the people that I'm around kind of today and kind of growing up, not really growing up, but being the past 5 years or so, I've known you. You've been one of the ones that's like stayed super passionate. And I know when I first met you, I was like, hey, you know, you seem really passionate about all this stuff. Kind of be careful. Don't like burn yourself out or, you know, I half expected you to be burnt out by now anyways. But you still seem to be kind of going hard at it and, you know, teaching yourself new things and all that. So, which is pretty commendable, and especially, you know, helping people out. And, you know, we talk back and forth about stuff. And we trade notes and links and stuff from time to time, which is fun to do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think the main idea was, we kind of approached it from a platform perspective. So when we talked last night, we started out with your Amazon thing, which supports regular Android devices too, right?
Yes. Yeah. So, we talked about the Amazon FreeTime app. I'm a big fan. So my inspiration for this was started with my nieces and nephews. I bought them some Android tablets and you know, I was looking for ways to lock it down. It's funny because I bought the tablets, you know, I found Amazon FreeTime, which is a great tool to, you know, kind of lock the kids into a kiosk mode. It has content available based on the kid's age. So when you go to set it up, you know, it goes from like 0 to 2 and 3 to 4 and upwards to like, I want to say 10 years old. But they've got books, they've got, games and, they can browse the internet for kid friendly content. Amazon kind of controls that. They also give you the capability to, whitelist sites that they can access through it. But, the first tablet for my niece, before I kind of messed with the free time, I was just using the normal parental controls, on the Amazon tab on the tablet. And, you know, I gave the tablet to my niece and maybe 5 minutes later, I got a notification saying, hey, thanks for purchasing Sonic video game from Amazon. And I was like, whoa, I thought I locked everything down. I didn't. So, that kind of spawned the, you know, research and that's how I found the Amazon free time. So that's great. It works on Android, iOS. And you know, it lets you see from a centralized point of view all the things that are done on that device, you know, books that are read or games that are played. Just get that visibility. And, you know, that was one of the things that were important to me because, you know, they do have the apps that you can install from like the Google Play Store that are like kids mode apps, but, you know, it's like centralized or not centralized. It's limited to that device. You know, maybe you can back up the settings and restore it to another device, but having something that's centrally managed, kind of like, you know, for the enterprise and MDM solution, giving you, you know, basic functionality, it's really nice and helps to just minimize the risk of the kids seeing stuff that maybe they're not ready for. You know, eventually they're going to see it, but, you know, give them some time and let them develop a little bit more before.
Yeah, and we talked about even doing simple stuff like I used to do with my roommate is I would lock his computer down so he couldn't basically install any software or anything. And you mentioned you had done that with a family member where he had, you know, put them in the kid bucket so that they wouldn't, you know, hurt themselves basically, which is a pretty interesting kind of novel idea. I don't have that as much. I guess, you know, when Connor gets older, I might have to worry about him like getting malware and stuff. But I think, you know, my wife has gotten pretty good about not just running random things or keeping up to date and stuff. And that doesn't really happen. Like the drive-by downloads don't happen. Drive-by hacking stuff doesn't happen as much as it used to. But yeah, so I was looking at the prices, non-Amazon members or non-Prime, it's like something a month. And then if you have Prime, it's $3 a month per person. And then $4.99 per, or five per month for non-Prime. So if you got a Prime account for $3, I guess, per person, you can get the that free time thing. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's pretty great. And then, you know, moving over to the PC or just a desktop, I've been using the Microsoft Family Safety feature, which back when I started using it in Windows 7, you had to install it and then configure it. Now it comes baked into Windows 10. And that's really cool because, again, you can centrally manage a lot on that device. You know, you create your parent account and then you create a bunch of kids' accounts. But then you can, you know, filter what websites they visit. You can even have some control over apps. I didn't lock down applications, mostly just monitored them. But from my understanding, you can say, you know, don't allow them to use these applications. You know, and the kids' account is very limited anyway, so they can't do any admin stuff. But, you know, having that ability.
Oh, so like if they want to like, if they want to like install like an application or something, it'll keep that part of it locked down too.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Do any of that. I want to say to install anything, typically what I did was, you know, I had a separate admin account and I would just switch that account and install the stuff. But, yeah, it's really, you know, awesome piece of software that Microsoft made for free. You can centrally manage it via logging into a live account. So you do have to have a live account or outlook.com account. But then you can, you know, kind of see everything. I seem to remember, if someone wanted to access a website, you can actually allow that via the web interface. So if you're away and they're trying to go to a site that actually is legitimate, you can say, yeah, sure, allow them to that site. And that's really cool, you know, for, to be able to lock down and give permission to things as needed.
We had our niece over and she had a tablet and she's like, oh, blah, blah, blah. You know, it doesn't have internet. And I was like, what? I was like, give me that thing. Uncle Rob will show you how to do internet. And I had, I had OpenDNS enabled on it with like most of the stuff. And I think I blocked social media, but I allowed, I think, YouTube. Mm-hmm. I had to go in and, you know, whitelist a couple of domains to get YouTube unlocked. But, you know, then she was talking about TikTok, and I was like, I don't even know anything about TikTok, and I don't know how dangerous it is or whatever. So I just kept that block, and she, you know, watched whatever videos and stuff with Connor and stuff like that. And then I had mentioned, you know, that Connor was watching her use it, and he managed to figure out how to unlock her device and, like, figure out what whatever her four-digit PIN was to unlock the tablet and do do whatever he wanted to on it, which I thought was kind of hilarious. So, but you know, he's with the Amazon Fire Stick, you know, I was saying I came down and he had been recording, you know, trying to do the Echo or whatever, the Alexa thing, and he was like, I had to look through his search history and it was like cars, fast driving tracks, cars something exploding cars or whatever. So it was all these like things he was trying to search for on YouTube. I think I did enable in the Fire Stick, there's like a filter, like it's like an adult filter content or something like that. And I don't know if that's actually how effective that is, but you know, with all these different pieces of technology, it's really hard to know like what's effective and what's not, and without like going through and testing it and trying to like pen test yourself and pretend that you're a 5-year-old or pretend that you're a kid, an adolescent kid trying to like get to whatever kids get to nowadays. So,
right. And we mentioned the Amazon Free Time actually works on the Fire Sticks. So you can install it and lock down that device so that, you know, the kids can only have access to whatever content, you know, is provided via Amazon, or you can even allow some things. So that's a little bit better than the parental controls for the Fire Stick. That gets really frustrating because you can lock, you can make everything require a pin, even like launching an app to watch, you know, Netflix.
Okay.
So that's, you know, another way, just Amazon Free Time on the Fire Stick and, you know, let the kids go at it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Let's see. We covered Windows, basically. What was it? What's it called? Like Windows Family?
Family Safety. Yeah. Family which safety. Is now built into Windows. Yep.
And then that's, I guess it's just a free service
that's
managed through Live.
All by Microsoft. Okay. Yep.
Cool. I mean, their Defender, even Windows Defender, has gotten pretty, you know, everybody used to joke about Defender way back, but nowadays they're getting a little bit better.
Yep.
There's still, you know, obvious certain things that are always going to be not blocked by Defender, but in general, they're pretty much on top of it. They even have stuff for like, you know, detecting ransomware, like detecting crypto locker type of stuff. And it'll be like, oh, well, this application's like trying to like, you know, rot 13 your files or something. And it would like warn you that something's trying to like, you know, encrypt your files or whatever that you don't know about, or that's like from a third party. So,
yeah,
that's pretty much what we got. Windows covered, you know, Android basically covered. I don't really think there's a big risk with like Chromecast. I mean, I guess Chromecast has the same type of stuff that Fire Sticks do. Well, Chromecast doesn't really have apps, right? It's just a streaming thing.
Whatever,
right?
You cast to it, yeah. And so that would be on whatever device you're casting from, locking that down.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I haven't done much with Mac. I know they have parental controls, but most of my family has one Windows. And then Linux, you know, I think you're only limited there by your imagination. I was actually talking to a buddy and, you know, we thought of some neat ways of locking Linux down. You know, you could update the doing website filtering or just block sites completely. Maybe have some scripts that run on login and update like Etsy host. And, you know, if you have your ad blocking via, you know, Pi-hole, or you could actually even install that on the system
locally.
There's no limit there. Like I said, it's only based on your imagination and skills and scripting.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, I don't know if any, you know, projects out that kind of automate that, make that easy to deploy just a little parental controls. Actually, maybe that should be a project for me.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they had like a Linux distro that's like kid-friendly Linux distro with like a Fisher-Price OS type of feel to it, with like content filtering built in. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody's built something. Maybe it's 5 years old now, but you know, it all kind of stays the same. But you know, really at the network layer, you can pretty much safely use kind of OpenDNS, and that'll block most of your bad stuff. And then you start talking about like, you know, blocking social media and like whitelisting specific things within that, within OpenDNS. But pretty much OpenDNS is gonna help block most of that stuff. So like a, you know, Linux box or Windows or whatever would, in theory, help with most of that. What was the other thing? Oh, you talked about consoles. That was the one I didn't think about. You know, they have a console, and you know everything's got an app for it now. So you got YouTube on consoles. The regular Wii actually had a YouTube player in it and a browser. So, you know, he could actually, in theory, if he could find it and knew where it was, he could use that to get to whatever he wanted to get to. With like a Apple, he uses that WebKit stuff, old versions of WebKit.
Yeah, my niece is always trying to social engineer me to unlock the web functionality on her Nintendo DS. Because, you know, if I set it up, everything's going to be locked down. Parental controls, I'm going to minimize, you know, internet access. So every time, you know, I'm over or they come over here, she's like, hey, can you, you know, allow me to access, you know, this hidden layer? I'm like, no.
It's probably not worth it either. Because yeah. I know, you know, there's not a whole lot of people doing like multiplayer DS stuff, but that, I don't know, I might be wrong.
All of the avatar stuff is completely, you know, on the internet, and that's the concern. Is, you know, I don't want my, you know, 5-year-old niece talking to some random person on the DS or any of the gaming consoles. So some are easier to lock down than others. Some don't even really have a way to lock it down, so that's something to, you know, think about. Like the Xbox, I mean, to your point the other night, if you have an Xbox, really, you should be, you know, at the age where you can handle certain things. You know, if you let your 5-, 6-, 7-year-old kid play on the Xbox and have access to it without any supervision, you know, there's a lot that they can get into there, you know, depending on games and what they do. So just something to think about, you know. We talked about the network. So there's the network approach and then the, you know, on the device parental controls approach. A lot of the modern wireless routers and just network devices have parental controls built in. So you can do it at the network layer. You can layer it up and, you know, you talked about OpenDNS, have that to block certain things. And then with the network devices, you can say, hey, just cut the internet, you know, to this thing after a certain time, or, you know, and turn it back on 8 o'clock in the morning or whatever. If you want to have a little bit more control there. It's something to think about, and something I've been thinking about is, you know, how do we really protect, you know, the young ones from certain things, give them some time to develop and grow so that when they do get exposed, because they will, you know, and you can't control everything. Hopefully they'll be ready. If not, you be ready to give them to have that talk with them and explain things.
So. Yeah, you know, we were talking about like, you know, what do I do about my child like doing resets or like bypassing security controls? And it's like, well, you know, kind of, you know, you kind of said like, well, by that age, you need to be able to have, even before, be able to be ready to have that talk if they're starting to do stuff like that anyways.
Yep.
Like, I had a DS that I had given, I had 2 DSs that I'd never bought one. And I acquired 2 DSs and I put the little hack card in there with a SD and filled it up with a bunch of games and stuff. And I think when I gave it to my niece, I think it had one of those like Japanese dating apps on it. and I don't know how like lewd or graphic it was, but it's all in Japanese, so you couldn't really play it anyways. And then it had, what she was playing was Grand Theft Auto on there, which was kind of funny, but not funny. And then she was like 9 or 8 or something like that. So it's like kind of animated violence at that point. But, you know, I don't even know if her parents were even okay with that. And then when she came over, you know, she had the tablet and I gave her the internet. And then I was like, oh, well, that wasn't really my decision to make, you know. So I sent a message to, you know, my, I guess, brother-in-law or whatever. And said, hey, she's got this tablet, and I gave her the internet, but I use OpenDNS, and I block, you know, all social media and all the bad stuff, and then I whitelisted YouTube, so you could at least do YouTube, and he didn't seem to be too concerned about, but, you know, you made that point. You know, you do whatever you want to the kids' devices, but if they have, like, a cellular network, or if they go to a friend's house, you know, eventually they're going to see something, or if, like you said, you know, you're at a restaurant or something like that and the parents or somebody else's parent is bored, or they just give the other kid their phone, mm-hmm. and the next thing you know, they're, you know, on the internet doing whatever they want to do, and they could run into something nasty. And I told that story about you know, my niece, she was, I guess she was supposedly, she was on like some math website or something,
And that Momo video got, in theory, what she says, injected into the site. It wasn't just like her going to YouTube or something. And then like everybody's flipping out about it. And then it was like, oh, well, nothing really happened. It's just a hoax or whatever. And but I think, you know, the conspiracy theory person in me thinks that like somebody went around like 4chan or something and trolled a bunch of websites at once to kind of get, you know, I don't know, for whatever reason, get on the news or just annoy people. But she was like, she was like in tears and messed up for like quite a while to whatever. And my little ones, he's, you know, he watches like, what was it Elmo and Grouchland, and like the bad Grouch guy was like scared him. So he's not even ready for anything near that, that crazy. Like he doesn't like the dark stuff, or like, you know, we watch like the Lego, whatever. And he's, you know, kind of get intimidated by the bad, you know, bad stuff that happens in there, and the dark stuff that's like even animated violence. He's not really desensitized enough, I guess, to watch any of that stuff. But yeah. Cool. I think it helps me a lot. Helps me kind of, you know, some of that knowledge helps me get in front of it. And you know, right now we're just hiding the remotes from him. And like I said, if I forget, leave the remote down there, you know, we wake up and he's been downstairs watching Netflix or whatever for God knows how long. Mm-hmm. I need to kind of get in front of that. So if I do, you know, accidentally leave Cody running, I can figure out something with Cody, because Cody doesn't need to be on the internet. It just needs to like do updates and that's it. Like it needs to download, you know, download the Usenet stuff and then that's it. But so it doesn't need to be doing, it needs to connect to, it doesn't need to connect to any bad content, but then there's movies in there that are like whatever. Yeah. I think he clicked a shark movie one morning and it was like somebody had downloaded, people can request whatever they want to watch, and somebody had downloaded that shark movie. It was like, I don't know what, and he watched a few seconds of it. He got scared and ran off. He's already been scared himself. He's already scared himself so far. But in general, I think that's pretty much it. You know, in my experience, I haven't really experienced the content filtering stuff. It's been more of like trying to keep, you know, friends and family from getting malware, which is a little different, because you want them to get to content that's adult content, but then you also don't want them to download crap from bad websites with malware on them and stuff. So it's a little bit different than
doing parental controls. Excuse me.
But I think it pretty much covers it. Yep. I don't know if there's anything else we talked about or you want to talk about.
Yeah, one of the kind of lessons that I learned from this was, so, you know, I went through, I hardened locked down all of the devices that, you know, I set up or purchased for them as gifts. But then, you know, they would ask their mom or their dad for their phones, and their phones are not locked down, you know? So, it's important to, you know, kind of be mindful of that. Don't tell your kids what your passwords are. You know, my niece, she knows everyone's password, of course, not mine, but, she knows passwords, and she will tell you the passwords if you ask her nicely. She's often say, hey, you want to know my mom's password for her phone? Because I know it. And I'm like, no, nice. don't do that. That's not good. Let me tell you about passwords. And I think I finally got it through my family members to, you know, have better password practices. Don't share with the kids. That is one of the nice things about the Amazon Freetime app, is it does create a profile for each kid. So like you as a parent, you'll have your account. It actually kind of replaced the UI for whatever Android device you're using. But the kid can sign in to their own account. You can even put a PIN on it, you know. But by default, there's no PIN for the kids. The kids can just select their icon, it'll take them in. And in order for them to break out of that kiosk mode, they have to have a password account, which is an adult's account or a regular account. So, don't share passwords, especially with your kids. Not even, you know, when your hands are full and you're like, just unlock my phone. No, don't do that.
Yeah,
teach them good password practices early. yeah, I think that was kind of a eye opener there.
Yeah, you know, whenever you, it's like any piece of technology or software you implement, and then people start using it, and you realize, you know, there's some misconfigurations or opportunities for kind of improvement. Yeah. But like, you know, even doing some stuff for work here, I noticed some machines that were kind of misconfigured, and I was showing my son and showing him, you know, trying to figure out how they got this way and, you know, what the status of them are. And he turns around and he's like, well, why would you let somebody in your computer without a password? I was like, that's a really good, and he came up with that all by himself. It's like, he's just like, that's crazy. Why would you let somebody in your computer without a password? I'm like, that's exactly. And then, you know, I send an email and they reply back with pushback saying, no, well, we want it to be easy for people to get into these machines because, you know, they don't do IT and they don't do computers. But I was like, all right, well, you know, you got a key to your house. You don't just leave your front door open just because it's easy to get into your house and leave the front door open. Like, there's basic things, you know, 101 hygiene you just can't not do. You can't leave your windows and doors open. You can't, you know, give copies to everybody of your key. Like, just basic stuff people wouldn't do to their house that they do, especially with work services and software that they don't, you know, they're like, oh, I don't care. It's just work. Like, if something happens, it's not my fault, or I don't care. It's not my device. Right. But, yeah, just kind of instilling that into people. It's fun stuff. And password managers too. I can't get anybody to use them. I can't get my mom to use them, you know. I don't know why. But then again, you know, parents and stuff like that, you know, non-IT people don't really have a whole lot of logins to need a password manager. But then again, right, all their passwords are going to be the same password. And even my wife was like that. She, you know, we started, you know, dating, or after we got married, I said, look, you need to get a password manager. You need to change all your important passwords to not one of the three passwords that I know.
Yeah, so far I've been able to convince a few of my family members to use a password manager. Made it really easy for them. Got the app on the phone, the browser plugins, LastPass. My rule is, if I find your password in any of the, you know, breaches, you have to change it. Nice. Or if I can guess your password, you have to change it. It's kind of working, yeah. But yeah, one other thing, something to think about is, you know, these devices, like even the Nintendo DS or the Switch, really aren't made for kids under the age of 13. Even though they do have parental controls, there's, you know, the legal text that says, hey, you have to be this old to really play with this device, and if not, get permission. A lot of people don't really think about that, and probably should, because now you're, you know, giving your kid access to this technology that, you know, it's not really designed for them. So that kind of is the reason why some of the parental controls aren't as great on all the devices, all the internet connected things. You know, we were talking about like your TV's got a browser, you know, if you have a smart TV, you know, or whatever, your smart picture frame. Yeah.
Smart anything with a browser just sounds gross to me.
Yeah.
Filthy.
Yeah. So, you know, that's something else to think about. You know, not all of this stuff is really made for kids or with kids in mind.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of scares me just, you know, a lot of kids now are doing just watching Twitch, and their parents will be there, and they'll be watching a specific person that I guess is, you know, I guess okay to for the parents to watch. But, you know, more than half of the stuff on Twitch is got language and a fair amount of swearing and, you know, violence and stuff. So I wouldn't let my kid or anybody loose on Twitch or anything like that.
Yeah. But I think I read somewhere someone said the internet was not designed for kids. It's not a safe place for kids. You know, there's, you want to be careful. Like I said, give them time, let them develop, you know, slowly introduce them. And then when they get to the point, give them the, you know, with great power comes great responsibility speech. Because, you know, they're going to get exposed. But, you know, you do what you can to like I said, give them the tools they need to be ready for things.
Cool. Yep. All right, I think that about covers most of it.
Yeah.
Again, I appreciate you doing this for the second time. but you know, we might do something else, do a more traditional, just interview, just talk about some hacker stories and whatnot. That would be something we could do if you're interested.
Sounds like fun.
I think that's pretty much it. You have any other questions? You done?
I think I'm done. That's it.
I think we're actually good. I'm gonna hit the actual recording button. So appreciate it, man.
All right.
Later, man. Stay safe.
All right. Bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.